He finds most Christians far too spiritual in the practice of their faith. Christianity is not a set of beliefs or doctrines one believes in order to be Christian. He says, but rather, Christianity is to have one's body shaped, one's habits determined in such a way that the worship of God is unavoidable. So that is the goal and purpose of taking on practices. And this week we're focusing on the practice of wearing skin and being in your body, which makes perfect sense then to have a yoga teacher here who practices this all the time. And so, Heather, I want to start with a question that my favorite podcast teacher by the name of Krista Tippett, the podcast is On Being, and she starts every interview she does with this one question, so I wanted to use it to start with you. Can you tell us what is the religious or spiritual background of your childhood?
First, thank you so much for having me. You're welcome. Really excited to be here, and if I wasn't teaching every Sunday, I would so want to join you.
Oh, that's
already
nice.
I'm so filled with love just by how you started, and Cat Stevens is one of my warm, fuzzy places, so it's like,
oh, good.
This song, I love this song.
Oh, good.
So much already that I'm full.
Oh, good.
But I was actually raised I was a fundamentalist Christian upbringing.
I'm sorry.
and that actually pushed me so much further away. I was raised in a way that we had to go to church on Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesday evening. Mm-hmm. My dad didn't have to go. My mom and my sister and I had to go.
Can everybody hear Heather?
No.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, come a little closer.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Now it's working. If I was too sick to go to church, I was too sick to get out of bed. I couldn't call my friends. I couldn't watch TV. It was very, very restrictive in that way. And I was also the kid in church that asked too many questions and got yelled at. So, I actually got kicked out of Sunday school because I kept saying, but how do you know that? Mm. But why, but where does it say that? Yeah, mm-hmm. So I was the one that was really curious, but that was not allowed. Mm-hmm. And we were not allowed to sing. We were allowed to sing, but we were not allowed to use instruments in the church.
Okay.
And we were not allowed to dance. That was a sin. So it was just so restrictive. And when I was 18, I was like, I am not going to church anymore. I refused. And my mom and I got in a big fight about it. and then in my young adulthood, I actually became atheist for a while. And then it was like, well, not really atheist. And then it was more agnostic, like, oh, well, I know something's there. But just didn't quite know what. And it was actually through some personal trauma and life just taking me on a big roller coaster ride that I found yoga. Mm-hmm. And it was through yoga that I actually deepened my connection with God. And that's
how
actually,
old were you when that happened?
I think 29.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it took me a while to come back, and it was actually when my my oldest child, when she was about 4, that we were talking, and I had been practicing yoga for a while, and I was really starting to kind of come into a more spiritual practice with it. And she had come back from a friend's house. They were a large Catholic family. And she was very upset that because the mom said that they would get in trouble, God would be unhappy if they didn't clean the room. And so she came home really upset that this image of the old man with the beard was going to strike them down if they didn't do the chores. And she was very, very troubled about it. And I didn't quite know how to deal with it because of my upbringing. I was like, well, that's kind of what I was taught too, but that I don't believe that anymore either. And so I just asked her, so what do you think God is? And she sat there for a second, and she looked around. She looked at the mountains because we were living in Southern California in the mountains. And she said, I think God is just light and energy all around and in all of us. And I was like, you're four. Oh my gosh, how did it take me this long to figure that out? But it was so, it was such a beautiful, authentic thing that she said. And that actually, her saying that started to deepen my beliefs as well.
That was fantastic. Yeah, so energy was my first word for God, too, because my mother had, well, I grew up in the Catholic Church, so I did have a God that until third grade. But then when I got older in those formative years, my mother started to describe God as an energy, and that was my first real understanding of God. The hard thing is to walk around talking about that, you know, that God that way. And if you walk around saying energy, it's just really hard to take hold of, which is part of why I wanted to do this today, because I'm trying to get us to marry languages a little bit. And I heard a radio program, I think it was the Commonwealth Club, I'm not sure, but on Friday night, I don't know if any of you heard this, but it was a debate. As we evolve, we no longer need God. That was the assumption. And then people debated against that, and people debated for that. And Deepak Chopra was on the debating against that we will always need God. And he talked a lot about consciousness. And he talked, the more he talked about consciousness, the more confusing I could, you know, I could feel the audience getting confused. You know, I could feel that how difficult, even though everything he said I agreed with, I could feel how difficult it is to sort of grasp on to that language. Yeah. And wondered if you had thoughts on that.
Yes. It really is hard to grasp, and I think that's maybe where the physical practice can come in. Of doing a physical practice like our yoga that we do, and I feel like especially in Western society, but also just modern society, that entering a spiritual practice through the physical can be really tremendously helpful, because I feel like we're always so go do all the time, and I feel like coming into a yoga practice that is very physical with the asana, that you get to express yourself through the body, but then you connect with the breath. And you start to get into the deeper layers. Once you go through, doesn't always have to be an exhausting practice, but once you challenge yourself physically and you start to move beyond the physical, when you drop into shavasana and you let everything go, that's the moment when you start to feel what else is there, that you start to feel that, okay, I'm not actually my body.
And so for those that don't know, that pose that she's talking about, Shavasana, is also known as
a corpse pose
or dead body pose.
So you let your body go. And the deeper you can get into that state of relaxation and letting all the sensation of the body go, the more you feel that there's literally this your spirit source. And you go, oh, that's more my essence. That's that, and because we all do share that, and especially in a room when you are in a practice with a group of people and you have the support of your community, you can let go of that physical together and you actually can feel the energy in the room, and it's like, oh, we really are one.
Yeah, good. And we're going to talk more about that and community in a minute. But what you've said kind of brings us to a good quote in the book. And she's talking about how did we as Christians get to this place where we divide, we're not very comfortable with our bodies as a faith tradition, especially, I think, in the Protestant tradition. And so Barbara Brown Taylor gives us a very short, abridged version of how we got here. She says, I'm not sure when Christian tradition lost confidence in the body, but I have some guesses. Although Jesus was a Jew, many of his earliest interpreters were Greeks who divided body and soul in ways that he did not. Oh, I need another pronunciation. Descartes? The philosopher, Descartes, thank you. So embarrassing. Descartes did not help matters by opposing nature and reason in his philosophy. Then along came the Protestant Reformation, of which we all are a part, with its deep suspicion of physical pleasure, followed by Freud's dark insights into human sexuality. Add to that the modern scientific reduction of the body to biological matter, overlaid by Victoria's Secret's ads, and it is a small wonder that so many of us are uncomfortable in our flesh. Yet here we sit with our souls tucked away in this marvelous luggage, mostly insensible to the ways in which every spiritual practice begins with the body. Our bodies have shaped our views of the world, just as the world has shaped our views of our bodies. Each of us has a unique body signature, which consists not only of our distinctive physical characteristics, but also of our posture, our gait, and our way of using our hands. So I really liked that idea of a body signature, and that we all have one. And it got me to thinking about my background in acting. And Heather doesn't know this, but in 4 years of movement class, 3 times a week, and what I didn't know back in those days was that we were really practicing yoga. So I have a muscle memory of a lot of what we do. I did for 4 years there. And a lot of it for an actor is you are your instrument, right? So you have to be completely accessible to all of your emotions, which means you also have to be conscious of where you are disconnected in your body. So old trauma, old injuries. Barbara Brown Taylor talks about being super tall at a very young age, so she is forever hunched over. And we all carry histories of our life in our bodies. So that's our body signature. So the more we can become aware of where we're held in our body, the more accessible to our own breath and our own power and our own expression of who we are, we become. And we can do that through yoga and through breath. And so often in movement class, you know, you'd get big moments of tears, and it became a lot like therapy as people would get in touch with old traumas that they then had to breathe through and wake up. And I'm curious if there, in your training as a yoga teacher, you were taught about that and the possibility that, and has that ever happened in any of your classes?
It's happened in many classes, and as you know, I encourage people to, you know, if they feel overwhelmed, if things are coming up for them, that they can take breaks from the physical and actually be with it. And there was somebody that came into my class that said from the get-go, I might be in child's pose the whole time. And I said, you know, that's totally cool with me.
Sorry. Sorry, I wish I could. Oh, you screwed up just a little more. So you had someone who said
that they might be in child's pose the whole time. They were going through.
Child's pose is like a resting pose.
A resting pose. And it's kind of, you bring all the focus inward, and rather than letting that energy go out, you kind of, you know, support yourself. And I've referred to that as the stuff of the warrior. So it's not that you have to go and be super strong and do all the advanced poses or, you know, yoga party tricks.
Right.
It's that if you feel stuff coming up in your yoga practice, that you're tapping into the somatics, that there's stuff in your body that is holding on. And if you have the opportunity to release that and just be with it, let it come up, breathe through it, that's actually what I refer to as the stuff of the warrior, that you can start to move through to the next level. It doesn't have to be the physical level. I actually refer to my body often as my meat suit.
Meat suit?
M-E-A-T.
M-E-A-T, your meat suit.
Just my meat suit. Because I went through, the way that I ended up discovering yoga after personal trauma was that I actually came to yoga with one goal in mind. I needed to lose weight. And this was after losing a baby. And I had gone through a really deep depression, and I gained about 40 to 50 pounds. And I had been a runner and had always been athletic, but I was like, I need to start working out again. I need to start running. And every time I went out to run with the excess weight on me, my knees, my ankles, my hips, everything was like, no, too much. And so it was very much a fluke that a friend was like, well, maybe go try yoga. And it was a hot yoga. And the first day that I did it, I was like, that was the hardest thing I've ever done, but I'm coming back tomorrow. And it was, and I actually asked the teacher after, you know, can I lose weight doing this? And she was like, yes, but that cannot be your goal. And I was like, okay, so she'll like, just be in the practice and see what happens. And so it was actually through, and I had gone through years of eating disorders as well, from my early tweens even, probably about 11. And it was amazing what happened when I started tuning in to what my body really needed. And naturally, it like within a year of practicing about 6 days a week, I ended up losing, you know, I thought I went in to lose 40 pounds, I ended up losing about 50.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
through the focus of the practice, not the result, which is something I say a lot in here. And it is something that I learned in college. And because that is really, that's our faith. It's also, as a church, we get so stuck in the mindset of results. You know, how many people are in the pews? How much recognition are we getting for the good work that we do?
Right.
If the more we focus on results, it's just one of those paradoxes of our faith that the more you focus on the work and the practice itself, the results will take care of themselves.
Yeah. It's just being present, being fully present in the moment and letting everything else come. And yes, I did have one teacher, she's actually a somatic healer and she really works with trauma stored in the body. She's a body worker. She was not one of my teacher trainers, but a teacher that I've been fortunate to work with. So I really did have the training with that. And I think that's given me the gift of noticing and being able to observe it in people.
In other people.
I'll come over and give you a little massage and child's pose.
Well, I was saving that for the end, but we can switch to it now. I'm just going to be all over the page. But yeah, so we can switch to it. So in child's pose, where you're
basically on your knees, face down, arms extended.
Right, so and I go there a lot whenever I go into my head. And again, if you can listen to this as an analogy for your life, mm-hmm. you know, go into our heads, or I start to go into judgment, or I can't get this pose. I go back to child's pose as a way of recollecting breath. And we do yoga in a very hot room. So I'm really stinky and sweaty and smelly. And here comes Heather. And she gets right down really close and starts to massage my back. And all I can think is, how can she stand the smell of my body? And so it's a really delicious, wonderful moment because it feels incredible to be on the receiving end of that. And I'm just wondering, what goes on for you you put hands on hands, skin on skin when you do that for your students. And I'm just wondering, what are you thinking in those moments?
Honestly, I'm not really thinking.
That's wonderful.
I'm not thinking. It's more that I'm called. And so I'm scanning the room, and there might be four people in child's pose at the same time, and I just have kind of this natural, like, I guess I'm going over there, and I'm led.
And you're called.
I'm called.
Perfect segue into Jesus. So, Jesus. So, Barbara Brown Taylor says, let me make sure I have it right. Yeah, it's long, but it's good. Get comfortable. To hold a sleeping child in your arms can teach you more about the meaning of life than any 10 books on the subject. To lie in the yard at night looking up at the stars can grant you entrance into divine mysteries that elude you inside your house. The daily practice of incarnation, of being in the body with full confidence that God speaks the language of the flesh, is to discover a pedagogy, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that I can't read. Pedagogy that is as old as the Gospels. Why else did Jesus spend his last night on earth teaching his disciples to wash feet and share supper? With all the conceptual truths in the universe at his disposal, he did not give them something to think about. Instead, he gave them concrete things to do, specific ways of being together in their bodies that would go on teaching them what they needed to know when he was no longer around to teach them himself. After he was gone, they would still have God's word, but that word was going to need some new flesh. The disciples were going to need something warm and near that they could bump into on a regular basis, something so real that they would not be able to intellectualize it, and so essentially untidy that there was no way they could ever gain control over it. So Jesus gave them things they could get their hands on, things that would require them to get close enough to touch one another. And in the case of the meal, he gave them things they could smell and taste and swallow. And in the case of the feet, he gave them things to wash that were attached to real human beings, so they could not bend over them without being drawn into one another's lives. And so when you say call, and you're not really thinking in that moment when you're touching and bending over us, being drawn into one another's lives, that's our call. It's our Christian call to love God, but to love neighbor. It never stays just in our body. It's where we learn it, but we certainly take it out into the world. And I think that's sort of where I want to jump to next, because there's a lot we didn't get to, but I don't think we have time for. So I want to jump into that idea of the way that Heather ends every one of her classes is with a beautiful chant. Is that what you call it?
It's a mantra.
A mantra.
It's Sanskrit.
Sorry. It's a mantra. It's in Sanskrit, which is actually pre-biblical. It's a vibrational language. And and we call it a chant because we will chant it as well, but we can also just say it, and I sing it as well.
Which Heather's going to sing it for us as the benediction at the end of the worship service, but you can say it for now.
It is Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. And the translation is, may all beings everywhere be happy and free of suffering, and may the thoughts, the words, and the actions of my own life contribute to this in some way.
Okay, say it again, but way slower.
Okay.
Because
it's my life mantra. This is what I really try to live my life by. It is, Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. And it means, may all beings everywhere be happy and free of suffering, and may the thoughts, the words, and the actions of my own life contribute to this in some way.
So if that's not love your neighbor, so that's a practice. My thoughts, my words, and my actions. And there's a beautiful way that Heather does this at the end of our class. You know, we often take our hands, and I invite you to do that with me now. So when we put attention, you lead it. What am I doing?
Okay, Nicole. All right. So I'll just say it and do my normal thing.
Okay.
So you can take a moment, close your eyes, bring your hands together, prayer position, starting at the heart. Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. May all beings everywhere be happy and free of suffering, and may the thoughts, the words, and the actions of my own life contribute to this in some way. Please bring the thumbs right up to the third eye, which is the point between the eyebrows of the forehead. And this symbolizes our thoughts, our wisdom, intuition. Everything you need is already here within you. Bring the thumbs to the lips to symbolize our words. Speak kindness and truth. Be impeccable with your word and lift each other up. Thumbs to the heart to symbolize our intentions, which become our actions. Live and love fully from the heart, without fear or hesitation, and let everything you do, everything you say, be rooted in love, led by the heart, and filled with gratitude.
And all the people said,
amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for having me.